A Connecticut woman's foot bitten off by a shark in Turks and Caicos. 22-year-old Yale graduate was snorkeling, and her foot was bitten right off. And I don't know how they get these pictures, but there's a newspaper from another country that has a picture of the foot in the flipper. It's just horrible.
At different standards down there.
Let's talk to a shark guy about this, because everyone's saying, well, this is very rare.
Kind of freaks out, though.
John Dowd, Executive Director, Atlantic Shark Institute. Good morning. So is this rare?
That's pretty rare. It's pretty rare. You're talking about less than 50 or 60 of these events worldwide in the course of an entire year. So, yeah, you think about the world population and you got less than 60 of these things happening. And in this case, having her foot taken off, yeah, that's pretty rare.
Why did it happen? Was it an accident or did the shark, what do you think happened here?
Yeah, what I think, typically these things are accidents. You know, these sharks, they know that humans aren't food. That's why we can all go swimming in these places and by the millions, tens of millions, and you don't see a lot of these incidences or very few of them. So typically these are mistakes. These sharks are in an area, they're feeding, there's bait, the water clarity, the time of day, what they're wearing, maybe jewelry, maybe not jewelry. There's a lot of factors, but typically these sharks, they know that we're not food. And they'll make a mistake. We kind of consider it a mistake, unfortunately. And in this woman's case, a horrific one, to say the least. Mm-hmm.
But why don't they like us as a food source?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're intimidated. You know, I've been in the water with white sharks and bull sharks and tigers and hammerheads. People have this impression that, you know, a shark sees you in the water and says, uh-oh, and is racing right at you. That's anything but the truth. They're very cautious. They, you know, we're large. They're not sure exactly what we are. They circle around for a long period of time when the water is clear, and they'll get more and more bold, but it takes a long time for them to do so. And if you make a quick movement, they'll dart away. So, yeah, this perception that they look and say, oh, that's a food source. These sharks only have two eyes. They're very protective of them, and they're more cautious than people believe them to be, with one big exception. When there's fish in the water, where there's a frenzy going on, when birds are working and they think, hey, this is an opportunity to feed, then you see mistakes getting made, and suddenly they bite an ankle or a wrist or a foot or somebody because they just the water's a little murky and there's a lot going on. But typically, no, these sharks are much more careful and cautious than people give them credit for.
The foot was in a flipper. Do you think that had something to do with it?
Yeah, you know, the flipper can add some movement, right? It can basically disguise the foot. It can look like a little bit of a, you know, a fish moving and so forth. Because you have to understand, these sharks, they're very opportunistic feeders, right? They just don't decide to chase something and they get it every time. Just like, you know, these animals on the plane, they miss a lot. And a lot of these food sources go away. So for them, it's very quick when they make a decision to say, hey, I think this is a food source. And yeah, they've got really sharp teeth and they move quickly and it can be devastating. In this case, I read where they said, hey, this might be, you know, they weren't sure, but it might be a Caribbean reef shark. That would be odd, you know, because they've only had three or four incidences in all of history, you know, so that would be kind of odd. But there are some other, you know, the tiger sharks are down there and the bull sharks, and those guys are top two, three all time with attacks and incidences. So, you know, but it doesn't mean it wasn't a Caribbean reef shark. It just means that would be really, really interesting and pretty remote.
Phil's dad was there in February in the same spot and took a picture of a shark that was kind of swimming around and looked like it was looking for food. Mm-hmm. Is there a chance it's the same shark? Or it's like saying same fish, but there's a lot of them.
Yeah, exactly. It's very much like saying the same fish because these sharks and these things, they'll move based on bait. So the bait moves, they move. Water temperature's a little too warm for them, they'll move. It's a too cold for them, they'll move because these are cold-blooded, so they need to surround themselves with water that they like. So is there a chance? Yeah, we've tagged sharks that stay in areas and they basically tend to know where to go and how to hide and how to ambush prey. So they get used to certain areas. So is it impossible? Absolutely not. Is it probable? Probably not. Probably not, because there's thousands of sharks down there. That shark that the buddy took a picture of could be 1,000 miles from there by now, or it could be in the same place. We just don't know.
We're playing one report earlier where a shark expert said, we don't taste good to sharks. Is that true? We don't taste good, or is it because they're cautious? Like you said.
Yeah, I've never read that we don't taste good.
I would think we would taste excellent. We're fatty. Everything about us is good.
Listen, I'm not saying that that's not true. What I'm saying is if you have 57 incidences in the world last year and there are hundreds of millions of sharks, I just don't think that they can acquire either a taste or a disinterest in humans because they just don't do it enough. For us, it's more about, you know, these white sharks, they're under the water. They look up. It's a silhouette. It looks like a seal. Someone's swimming. They've got arms and legs. They're on a surfboard or a paddleboard. They go up. They hammer this thing with a breaching attack. They crunch down on and they say, wait a second, that doesn't feel like a seal. Right. You know, the seal don't have 200 and something bones in it. So, mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of times with these white sharks, then they'll circle because they're saying, like, what's going on here? So I don't think it has much to do with what they know our taste to be. I think it's just we're large. And that's why they say, listen, if you're going to go swimming, you know, swim with a group. Because yeah. these sharks, they oh, wait a second, that's a lot of people versus well, swimming by yourself.
Quint and Jaws told a story that was actually a true story about an American battleship that went down and the crew was out in the water and sharks picked them off one at a time.
So Indianapolis.
That, yeah. Right. They were in a group.
And the reason for that would be that, as I kind of shared earlier, these sharks are cautious. Initially, right?
Okay.
Because they don't know what's
okay,
going
so
on.
Okay, so they circle for a long
time. And they're still there. So
but once there's blood in the water.
Yeah, different game entirely. And that's why they, like, when we go out and we film and we don't have cages and we're doing documentary or we're doing research or we're doing something for Shark Week or Discovery or something or a Nat Geo, they'll get closer and before you know it, they'll bump you.
John's
you know?
In the cage. Cage in the yeah. water.
Sharks, in,
sharks
the water.
In the water. Our shark.
Yep. Very well you got to the my
yeah, so that's so that unfortunately with the Indianapolis, yeah, those guys are sitting there hour after hour, day after day. Some
okay.
of them die,
yeah.
and then suddenly, so yeah, that turns into a classic frenzy. And of course, the more action, the more vibration, the sharks that are not far detect that. And before you know it, you've got thousands of sharks in the area. And that must have been a horrific scene. But yeah, I don't think there's much to they don't like how we taste.
And if you get bit, mm-hmm. just start punching it.
Yeah, punch. Scratch, claw, grab the gills, and get to shore. Get to safety. Get to shore as fast as you can. But, yeah, because a lot of times they'll bite. They'll say, that didn't feel right. They might be a little bit confused. They might be, hey, what's going on? And that's why the quicker you can get out of Dodge, and if they're right next to you, you know, you scratch, you claw. The eyes are a very susceptible area, which is why they have membranes that will come up and try to cover them when they bite or they attack, because they're very cognizant of their need to protect their eyes. So eyes are a good part, the gills. It's all about, you know, show aggression and get out of, and move as fast as you can towards shore or shallower waters.
John, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. For a smart guy, you don't sound nerdy.
No, not at all, no.
Sound like a fun guy to have a beer with. John Dowd, Executive Director, Atlantic Shark Institute. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Have a great morning.
You too. All right, you too.
You know, I often wonder if Jaws, the movie itself, is responsible for our fear of sharks.
It didn't help.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, I remember seeing that movie as a kid, and it just, I wouldn't even go in a swimming pool that summer.
The beaches did lousy that year. I remember that.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a thing.
Yeah.
But knowing that there's something in there that could eat you
yes.
makes me think, I will just take my swimming elsewhere.
Exactly, yeah. right. Yeah, this is your home. I'm going to invade your home.
It's like, I just don't want to hang out someplace where I might be part of the food chain.
Exactly.
Yeah, if I
right.
jump in the water, I'm having fun. Like, yeah. I'm not this guy. Like, yeah, hey, yeah. I'm the executive director of the shark thing.
Right. They're going to circle a couple
times. Like, I'm on vacation. I want to have a beer later.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to potentially be... Dinner.
Yeah, I know if they circle me, it'll make the water really unpleasant for them in a couple moments.
What I always say is when they'll say stuff like, it's more scared of you than you are of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, all I'm the like, time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah but
do you know how scared
it.
I am
I
of it?
I want to find
yeah.
out. This one's kind of brave sometimes.
Yeah, plus when I'm scared of something, that's when I start making irrational decisions.
Right.
So you get your foot lopped off. You have to do things very quickly
yes.
and correctly if you want to live.
Right.
Mm-hmm. On the phone right now is a good friend of the show, Dr. Ron Clark. He's Associate Chief of Emergency Medicine at the Hospital of Central Connecticut. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you get your foot lopped off by a shark. What do you do?
All right. So the captain did the right thing with, going in the water. Again, you want to keep the scene safe, but going in the water, getting the patient out, and then, the first thing we do as emergency medical providers is the ABCs, so airway, breathing, circulation, right? She's breathing, so the airway's open, breathing, and then circulation that we know that she's bleeding from her leg. So he, the captain, from what I've heard, did the right thing by putting a tourniquet on her leg so she wouldn't bleed out. And in this particular 22-year-old female, the bite was on the distal aspect of her leg, just above her ankle, and it must have been a pretty big shark. I was listening to the previous guests. I'm not sure what kind of shark it was, but the shark actually bit through her leg completely. So it just severed her ankle and foot off of her leg. So again, and my concern would be, you know, bleeding out. So you put the tourniquet on. And
where do you put it? As close to the end as possible, or near the right, just below the knee?
Right, you want to go close to, as close to the end as you can, because again, you don't want to ruin the rest of the leg. So wherever the bleeding spot is, obviously you go above it, but you don't want to go too high and you know shut off all the blood flow to the entire leg. So you just go just above the wound.
And the mistake that people make is they don't do it too tight.
You got to crank it.
The victim will start screaming like that hurts.
Yeah. You want it so that it's tight, and so that, you know, again, these people have arteries down there that are now severed, and you know, when the shark bites a leg like this, it's going to be a crush, a tear, and a shred injury where you're just going to go right through everything. The shark goes through your bone, through your blood vessels, through your nerves. And in this case, again, shark bites are incredibly rare. As the previous guest said, 57 for all of 2022, and only 5 were fatal. And again, in general, the shark bites that are fatal, they'll hit like a vital organ, like they'll bite and, you know, either, you know, get the liver or puncture a lung or something like that.
Yeah.
And again, the shark is not really, you know, looking for people. They're looking for food. And, you know, the swimmers are intruders into their environment. And if you look like food, they're gonna take a bite. But again, it's incredibly rare. I mean, these people,
but Doc,
you know.
It's important to crank that tight, right? Because I heard a story not too long ago in Connecticut. Someone cut their leg open on a prop, and they didn't tie the tourniquet tight enough.
Yeah, you have to crank it down, Chaz, so that the blood flow is completely occluded. And you can leave it on for a while until they get to the ER. And then once they're in the ER, other things happen. You know, IV access, the person goes on to a monitor. With shark bites, we're always concerned about foreign bodies, so like things like teeth from the shark being in there. Obviously, if it's a crush injury like this lady, they actually had her foot put on ice and brought the foot in, which was in a flipper. And they put it on ice and you know, transport it to the hospital as well. So, but then also there's concern of infection too. So people who get injuries from the ocean, there's something called Vibrio, which is a bacteria in the ocean. So you have to cover with antibiotics, things like Cipro and doxycycline for infection there as well. And then the concern is, you know, do you put the foot back on? And in this case, the great part about Turks and Caicos is it's beautiful. The bad part is the medical care is probably not the same as in the United States or other places. And so in this case, there was a delay of about 6 hours to airlift the person to Miami. And so I don't think that she got her foot put back on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have about 4 to 6 hours. And honestly, it's common with me in the ER for things like fingers and toes to get cut off that we put back on. And we
do you put them back on, or do you have to call someone to do that?
So we call I do not personally put them back on. We have, if it's a finger, I have a hand surgeon that will put it on, or a podiatrist that will put it back on. But again, a lot of times you need a vascular surgeon as well, because you need multiple pieces. You got to put the soft tissue on, but you also have to connect all the blood vessels so that the extremity that you're trying to reimplant is going to be salvageable and be perfused, meaning it gets blood flow.
I don't know how much money you people make, but it's not enough.
No.
It's amazing what people can do, but again, you're talking hours to do that. Reimplantation is generally 4 to 6 hours to even consider it. There are some implants that go up to 24 hours, but again, the other side of that, in a case like this lady, she's got like a dirty foot from a dirty mouth of a shark.
Yeah,
it's been in the water. It's been off of her for 6 hours. She gets to the trauma center finally, and that surgeon or trauma surgeon or orthopedic surgeon or vascular surgeon or a team needs to make the best decision for the patient. And with medicine, our first rule is primo non nocere, which means first in Latin, do no harm. So again,
see, if that was the first day of med school, I'm like, I'm out.
What's for lunch today?
I'm never going to remember this.
What's for lunch today?
Exactly. Don't, Chaz, the first thing I want to do is don't make the situation worse. It's already bad. And in this case, you know, first do no harm. That, you know, if you have a dirty foot and I try to be fancy and put it back on and then she gets an infection, now she loses her whole leg.
Wow.
So, again, it's always a judgment call, and I think in this case they decided not to reimplant because there's the risk to benefit was too great. But, you know, these are, you know, uncommon injuries, but they do happen. It was interesting. There were, from 2022, there were 8 shark bites on Long Island coast. So on the coast of Long Island, we had 8 up here. Six of them were confirmed. So it's not – it's incredibly rare to have this happen, but it's not a risk of zero.
I'm gonna ask you a couple of questions. Just the big takeaways here for the rest of us, because it might not be a shark, but it could be a boat propeller. It could be, you know, something, a horseshoe or whatever. But if someone gets a really bad cut, you tie it off real good, like real. You can't tie it too tight.
Correct.
The point is, you're going to try to save their life by having them not bleed out. You can't put the blood back in.
Right.
You only have so much blood. Once it's gone, that's it.
First thing, tie that tight.
Right.
As tight as you can.
Yep.
And now you call 911. You get in the car and drive, or do you wait for an ambulance?
Boy, that's a judgment call that people have to make individually. I think it depends on where you're at. Somewhere in like New Britain, where I work, 911, they're there in probably a minute to 2 minutes. If you're more rural, you know, where it's a voluntary ambulance service that may be 30, 40, 50 minutes out. Me personally, if it's a family member of mine or a friend, I would tie it off and drive that person in.
And then call 911 while you're in the car.
Exactly. And you can do it. You can call in the car, and that's called a paramedic intercept. So you're in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, you're trying to get back, and that's called a paramedic intercept. I actually had a personal experience with my son with that when he was younger. And I was up on Lake Lilanola, and he had had a seizure and was seizing, and it was a bad situation. And, you know, we ended up having a paramedic intercept come up there.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.